Stop being shy. Get over it and ask the questions.
Das ist die Stimme von Catherine List. Die Austroamerikanerin war jahrelang Vizepräsidentin des Forum Alpbach und sie kommt immer noch gerne hierher. Sie ist eine echte Expertin fürs Netzwerken und wir wollten von ihr wissen, wo man in Alpbach am besten neue Menschen kennenlernen kann.
It has more to do with how than where. There's a reason we're on this mountaintop. You stand over the things. We're above the normal conventions and normal ways of doing things. People rarely wear ties here. The difference between a student and a professor and a Nobel Prize laureate is not so far now here. So the idea is get over it and ask the questions. If someone doesn't want to talk to you, it's more their problem than yours, but you really are here to talk to people and people are here to talk to you. That's the point.
Do you maybe remember during the last years that you were here, kind of embarrassing situation where you were like, oh my God, that didn't went well?
Constantly. it's, yeah, und? You know, I embarrass myself on a regular basis, so what's new?
Presse Play. Was in Alpbach wichtig ist.
It's gonna be...
Der Pressepodcast aus Alpbach wird unterstützt von der Erste Group.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei Folge 8 unseres Kongressjournals aus Alpbach. Hier sind wieder Eva Winreuter
und Anna Wallner.
Ja, und das Netzwerkkarussell dreht sich in diesem Jahr wieder ganz ordentlich. Ohne die Pandemie-Einschränkungen und auch obwohl einige der traditionellen Events nicht mehr stattfinden. Etwa der Empfang der Landeshauptfrau Niederösterreichs oder der Wien Holding.
Aber am Montag war das traditionelle AIT-Gartenfest und auch der Patente-Cocktail, am Dienstag die erste Night. Und wir wollten für den Auftakt dieser Podcast-Folge noch von ein paar anderen Stammgästen wissen, wo und wie das in Alpbach am besten funktioniert mit dem Kontakteknüpfen.
Die Leute glauben immer, sie rennen auf 10 Veranstaltungen, verteilen 100 Visitenkarten und gehen mit einem großen Netzwerk nach Hause. Vielmehr ist es der eine Kontakt, der wertvoll ist, das eine tiefgründige Gespräch, die eine Begegnung am Berg, die man mitnimmt und aus der sich ein guter Kontakt entwickelt.
Am besten über die Eva-App. Da sind alle Teilnehmerinnen und Teilnehmer drinnen und man kann dort mit einem Scan den QR-Code von einer anderen Person auf dem Badge einscannen und dann hat man gleich alle Kontaktdaten drauf. Man kann dann chatten, man kann sogar Videokonferenzen machen. Das ist perfekt.
Also ich würde sagen, es gibt drei Möglichkeiten. Möglichkeit eins ist, bei den spannendsten Sessions nachher mit den Leuten zu sprechen, die ein bisschen mitgemacht haben, die eindeutig emotional dabei sind und unbedingt noch weiterreden wollen. Das ist sicher ein guter Ansatz. Der zweite, der technokratische, vielleicht ein bisschen langweilige, moderne, ist in der App, die jedes Jahr besser wird, wo man wirklich sehen kann, okay, wer ist das, wo gehen die sonst noch hin und so weiter, wo kommen die her? Und das dritte ist natürlich die klassische Antwort, diesem 2 in der Früh im Jakoba nach dem ein oder anderen Bier.
Also das haben wir ja sicher alle geantwortet, am besten beim Jakob am Abend. Ich widerspreche allerdings, weil ich finde eigentlich in Sessions nachher oder dazwischen in Pausen lernt man Leute super kennen, weil man sich ja meistens dann über Themen unterhalten kann, die irgendwie beide interessieren. Also ich habe heute Vormittag schon eine Session gemacht, wo man dann in Gespräche kommt, die wahrscheinlich ein bisschen vertiefend sind. Aber ja, es schadet nicht auch am Abend irgendwie Leute anzusprechen, die man vielleicht sonst nicht so leicht treffen würde.
Ein guter Platz zum Networken sind immer die Hikes. Auch wenn die heuer sehr ins Wasser gefallen sind, gibt es trotzdem die Busse, wo man viel Zeit hat, mit Menschen auf sehr engem Raum zu reden. Dann ist es recht kuschelig und natürlich die Leute können nicht weg. Ne?
Peinlich ist immer dann, wenn das Gegenüber einen kennt und man selber nicht weiß, mit wem man überhaupt spricht.
Ich war ja schon als Stipendiatin da und ich muss im Nachhinein lachen, jetzt 15 Jahre später, wie mutig ich als Stipendiatin einfach alle Speaker angesprochen habe und, glaube ich, mehr Diskussionen mit ihnen geführt habe, als ich es heute mache.
Wir Journalistinnen sind übrigens privilegiert. Denn eine andere gute Möglichkeit, wen kennenzulernen, sind natürlich die Interviews, die wir hier führen. So wie meine Kollegin Anna Wallner, die Schwedin Anna Rosling Rönnlund für diese Folge zum Gespräch getroffen hat.
Ja, Eva, da hast du völlig recht. Getroffen habe ich Anna Rosling Rönnlund schon um 8 Uhr früh an der Bar des Alpbacher Hofes, weil ihr Terminplan in Alpbach so besonders voll war. Sie hat ja zum Beispiel auch den Schrödinger-Saal, und zwar komplett vollen Schrödinger-Saal im Kongresszentrum, sehr gut unterhalten bei ihrem Vortrag gemeinsam mit dem Erste Bank-CEO Willibald Czernko. Bekannt ist die Designerin vor allem für das Buch, das sie 2018 mit ihrem mittlerweile verstorbenen Schwiegervater Hans und ihrem Ehemann Ola Rosling geschrieben hat. Factfulness heißt es, und es wurde damals nicht nur von Barack Obama, wohl auch mit dem Hinweis auf seinen nicht gerade fakteninteressierten Nachfolger Donald Trump empfohlen, sondern es hat buchstäblich alle Bestsellerlisten der Welt erobert. Außerdem ist sie aber Gründerin der Gapminder Foundation, die es sich zum Ziel gesetzt hat, Informationen und Daten frei zugänglich zu ermöglichen. Die Software, die sie entwickelt und schon 2006 an Google verkauft haben, hat etwa auch die animierten Bubble Graphs, die heute sehr oft im Einsatz sind, entwickelt. Anna Rosling-Rönnlund trägt bei unserem Treffen ein knalloranges Sakko und eine große runde Brille. Offenbar mag sie es gerne bunt, denn bevor wir über ernste Themen sprechen, sagt sie, wie gut ihr meine hibiskusfarbene iPhone-Hülle gefällt. Aber dann legen wir los und reden darüber, warum die Welt ein besserer Ort ist, als die Menschheit glaubt, warum wir lernen sollten, unseren Dramenkonsum zu ändern und über die guten Seiten der KI. Wie alle unsere Interviewgäste im Podcast frage ich auch Sie, wofür Sie gerade besonders brennt.
I think my biggest passion since a few years, and it's sort of growing, is we have been testing what people know about the world and by asking fact questions in many different topics. And what we see is a systematic misunderstanding about the world around us, where people seem to have the similar kinds of misconceptions. And I think my new huge passion is trying to figure out how can we get people aware that they share the same misunderstanding about the world, and how can we fix that? Mm. I think that's a huge one.
Yeah, that's a huge one. Yeah.
But that's where my mind is stuck.
I wonder, the book that you wrote with your father-in-law and your husband is now, I think, something like 6 years old. And I wondered if you think that this, the status of misconception of the, in the world changed. Is it worse or is it a bit better since then?
An interesting question, because we haven't asked the question systematically, like every year, to see a gradual change. So I couldn't really answer that. I might think that when we wrote the book, the world was, for people living in wealthy, well-off countries, I think that when we wrote the book, the world was pretty stable at the moment. And since then, we have had a lot of things going on, right? So maybe people are a little bit more correct about the biggest problems, like there is a potential risk of wars, there is a potential risk of pandemics. Before we wrote the book, because we wrote in the book that that was one of the biggest risks, and I think no one really paid attention because, you know, who cares if someone is sneezing around you? And then came the pandemic with an airborne thing, right? It's I think in some senses, I think people are have a better understanding about the world around them, but I think they might draw too dramatic negative conclusions from that and think that now everything is worse than ever, which if we look in the data, a lot of things has actually continued to improve, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's one of the missions or one of the main ideas that you bring in this book, that the world is actually a much better place than a lot of people, maybe the whole world, thinks. I really wanted to get back also on this thing that you said, that the world became much more confusing since 2018, mm-hmm. with all the things that you said already, pandemic, war, mm-hmm. etc. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, how can someone understand the world today if he is not well educated and maybe doesn't even speak English?
That is one of the things we want to solve, because there is a lot of information in academia, but it doesn't really reach people. And the format the research has is something that most people like would never, ever go after, because it's such a hard read. So I think that is the challenge for the whole, like the media and the researchers, to find ways of actually reaching out with their information. And I think there's a big distinction when we say that the world has become a better place. What we think of is usually human development. I mean, all of us know that at the same time, a lot of bad things are happening when it comes to the environment and the climate that we are basically causing by the way we live here. So,
As I also understand, the idea of your mission or of fact of the book Factfulness is that it's not only about the information, it's also about the way how we think. Yeah. Could you maybe explain us how we can change that, how we think?
I think changing the way we think is a huge thing, right? So even if we, in the book, we put it into, like, we talk about 10 dramatical instincts that that leads our thinking astray. And, you know, it's just the way our brain functions when we get information. So what we're trying to do is to show, like, some rules of thumb, how you can sort of learn your brain to compensate for the automatic ways the brain functions when it sees information. And one of those things might be that we tend to divide things into, we call it the gap instinct, but we tend to talk about the poor and the rich and the healthy, unhealthy, the good and the bad. While to understand the world, most often we have to look at the majority, which is usually between those extremes. So to understand the world, we need to look at the data. And even if we don't have the time to learn everything by heart, because most people don't, and we don't have the energy to learn all the data by heart, the world is also changing. So we have to do it over and over again, right? So therefore, we thought we need to help people to find some constructive ways to compensate in the thinking. And mostly it is about reminding ourselves about some basic ways we usually go wrong.
Diesen Gap-Instinkt, von dem Anna Rosling hier spricht und den man auf Deutsch wohl den Instinkt der Kluft nennen kann, konnte man auch in der Pandemie gut beobachten. Denn da war auch wieder ständig die Rede von der Spaltung der Gesellschaft zwischen den wissenschaftsgläubigen Impfbefürwortern und den Impfgegnern. In Wahrheit aber war die Gruppe der Impfgegner viel kleiner und die Welt gar nicht so gespalten. Was meint Anna Rosling? War die Pandemie für den Umgang mit faktenbasiertem Wissen ein Erfolg? Oder eine Niederlage?
That's a little bit trickier one, because early in the during the pandemic, in the beginning, no one thought there would be vaccines. Then suddenly there was vaccines, and it was actually spread broadly. And afterwards, we have a discussion: was it really necessary? Kind of discussions have started, right? Even among those who are not anti-vaxxers. So, I think the pandemic showed us that even if we are we're working in silos without transparency, usually, I think it was a massive improvement in global collaboration, because we managed actually to find a lot of vaccine solutions in a pretty short time. So in that sense, I think it was very fascinating and very impressive. Hopefully, we learn from this, and next time we're hit by a pandemic, which might be worse, because this was a, I mean, if you look at different kinds of pandemics, it could be far worse. Yeah. I mean, in some of the some pandemics, you have the kids dying, and that I think most of us would think would be worse, right? So hopefully we learn from this one. If it was a success or not, I think that's hard to say, but I'm impressed by a lot of the work.
What is your thought on AI? Also AI compared to the question, where do I get my facts from, and are these facts true or not? Yeah. And are they maybe, especially when you look at pictures that are made by AI, it's a totally new field that we have to look at. Yeah? We see something which is not true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. So first of all, I'm impressed, because it's truly fascinating technology, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And you see all those pictures where people fortunately still have too many fingers on some of the images, right? So you can say that you can see for real that this is a fake one. But I do see that, of course, it's going to be an issue with whether you can trust imagery, for instance. But we have had, I mean, over the years, it has always been possible to cheat when you write the text. I mean, you can write something that is not true. Mm. You have always had that opportunity. When you tell a story, you can always lie. Mm. And when you draw a picture, you can always lie. So I think we have always had the opportunity to lie. And now we can do it at a bigger scale, which is, of course, a little bit scary. And we don't really know how to deal with it. But I think
it's not only scary, it's dangerous. Because
you can be dangerous, definitely.
Influence so many people around the world with definitely. Just one click.
Definitely. But on the other hand, if we turn it around, we have never had the opportunity before to make use of such a powerful tool, which actually, if we manage to find ways of treating it well, it could be our like knowledge body, because the human brain is bad at remembering loads and loads of information. So maybe we can find a way of teaming up and making sure that we store the hard facts somewhere else, so that one could keep track of everything that's going on. But then we would, of course, need some kind of system with a whitelisting thing. What is true and what is not, and how do we know, right? And doing that is always a bit sensitive, because whose truths are we telling, right? So, I mean, I think we have the same problems as we have always had as humanity. We just, it's on steroids. So we have to figure out how we can make something good out of it.
Ja, und was sagt Anna Rosling-Rönnlund, wie soll die Idee von faktenbasiertem Wissen verbreitet werden? Und wie können Unternehmen und wir alle da mithelfen?
So what we try to do at Gapminder now, we have been asking 10,000 fact questions in different areas and different topics. And we've been asking it in different countries and in different expert groups and so on. What we're doing now is that we're putting that information together into, you could say, quizzes on different topics. And what we are planning to do in the close future is finding a way of actually creating a certificate methodology where we hope that corporations and organizations and politicians would actually make sure that their staff knows at least the basics within their own field, or at least have ridden themselves of the worst misconceptions we know most people have. Because it feels reasonable that people with the power and sitting on the economy, right? Yeah. And deciding for all of us, that they are somewhat aware about what's going on and the biggest trends and proportions globally and within their own field. Because otherwise, there's a huge risk they will make, even if they intend to do good, there's a huge risk that they will make decisions that might even be bad.
Und dann haben wir noch ein Thema angesprochen, das so gut wie immer sehr emotional geführt wird und bei dem auch gerne Fakten verdreht werden. Die Klimakrise. Was sagt denn die Schwedin Rosling zur Fridays for Future-Bewegung, die ja aus ihrem Land kommt?
Yeah, so I think Fridays for Future did a massive thing, right? Actually getting the whole climate up on the agenda in so many places, which is amazing. And I mean, it's very, very impressive that Greta herself managed to drive the whole thing. Though, since then, we have been also, when we with all our fact questions, we've also been testing climate questions on the general public and experts in different fields. And at the moment, we have a battery of about 130 things we have found where people are wrong about the climate. And they are wrong about proportions, and they are wrong about methods, and they are wrong about a lot of things. So what people usually do is that they overestimate the new technologies, how far we have come implementing them, and how big the effect is. So people think we have achieved more than we have, and we have more solutions than we actually have. So they are a little bit too positive on that note. And then seem to be very wrong about the system, the climate system itself. So I think what is needed, Greta managed to make people much more aware than before, and that is a very heroic thing. But I think she bangs her head against the wall in a way on the same matters that we do. Mm-hmm. I think she recognizes that when she meets the leaders, and even in her own organization, people might be wrong about the information itself. And when people are wrong about their own cause, there is a risk that they will do the wrong actions or point the wrong fingers. So I think even when it comes to climate, we are at the point where we have to start to be aware that we must also learn the things to make sure that we do the right things to basically try to make the world a better place, right? So I think that big part is still ahead of us, and that is maybe the trickiest one, because no one want to pay that much attention to something as complicated and boring, because we are all in the middle of our own lives and want to do fun things with family and friends. And so I think there is a mismatch. If you ask someone if they care about the climate, many people nowadays will say yes. If you start asking how you're going to do that, it will start to become a little bit shaky. And if you start asking what people really know about the climate, then you will see that we still have a lot of knowledge to achieve, really? To make the right things.
Ja, und ganz zum Schluss wollte ich von meiner Gesprächspartnerin dann noch wissen.
Did you ever think about writing a second book, part two?
Yes, so that is something we are currently thinking about, but we actually thought about it already when we wrote the book. In the book, we talk about a lot of things, and then in the end we say, so now you need to practice these habits, and you need to, in practice, try to figure out how you can work to make sure that you are more correct about the world around you and have better thinking ways. So I would say after the book came, the book started with 13 fact questions. Since then, we have asked 10,000 fact questions. So we thought actually that we needed to look into the field on a much wider scale. And now we're trying to make something that is, in practice, ways you can easily do some, you know, test yourself in a lot of different areas. And hopefully that could be a way to for you to learn that you're probably wrong about things you care about.
Like a huge question book with 10,000 questions. No, that's too much. But
yeah, no. Yeah, so we built a website where you can take the quizzes, right? Mm-hmm. So that is sort of, after writing the book, Factfulness, we said we should make sure that we have a decent amount of information that people can use some way. So the next one will definitely base upon the first book and the material we have gathered, and be sort of draw the conclusions from that. It will not be a massive questionnaire, but it will. But we have made some findings in that material that is pretty unique and pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. So yes, but we haven't started any writing yet. So, but I think it's coming.
Also wenn Sie jetzt richtig zugehört haben, dann kann man einen Teil der 10.000 Tests und circa 130 Fragen zum Klima, die die Rosslings zusammengestellt haben, auf der Webseite gapfinder.org und dem Tool Worldwide Upgrader finden und dort einfach seine eigene Einschätzung testen. Zum Beispiel mit einer Frage wie dieser. Im Jahr 1980 lebten etwa 40% der Weltbevölkerung in extremer Armut und hatten weniger als $2 pro Tag. Wie hoch ist dieser Anteil heute? Sind es 10, 30 oder 50%? Ja, und nach der Auflösung erfährt man nicht nur, ob man selbst richtig liegt, sondern auch, wie viel Prozent der Menschen die Frage richtig und falsch beantwortet haben. In diesem Fall, sagt zumindest Gapminder, lagen 92% der Menschen falsch. Und die Auflösung zu dieser Frage, die finden Sie in den Shownotes unserer Folge. Ja, und auch heute gibt es zum Schluss der Episode einen kurzen Hinweis in eigener Sache. Wir laden am kommenden Donnerstag, am 31. August, zum Brown Bag Lunch ins Alpacher Schulhäusl. Und zwar um 12.30 Uhr für die Aufzeichnung eines Live-Podcasts. Sie können also dabei sein, wenn eine Folge unseres Podcasts entsteht. Mein Gast wird Finanzminister Magnus Brunner sein und wir werden miteinander über aktuelle Themen der Finanzpolitik diskutieren, über das Bargeld in der Verfassung, über Green Investments, über Kreditvergaben in Hochzinszeiten. Wer es nicht live schafft, kann das Gespräch dann am Freitag in unserem blauen Podcast-Kanal Was wichtig wird nachhören. Wer es doch persönlich vor Ort zu uns schafft, bekommt auch einen kleinen Lunch.
Ja, und hier bekommen Sie noch zweimal eine frische Folge unseres Kongressjournals aus Alpbach. Wir freuen uns über Feedback, Lob und Anregungen, also schreiben Sie uns. Die Mailanschrift finden Sie in den Shownotes. Und wenn Sie mögen, was Sie hören, dann sagen Sie es weiter. Wir sagen Tschüss und bis morgen.
Presse Play. Was in Alpbach wichtig ist.